The fur trade does not start with the English here in the northern part of the North Americas. It starts with the French, and their fur trade was not as well organized as the modern HBC we know in 1851. There was a series of forts following the St. Lawrence and the Great Lakes, and the French employed coureurs de bois, men who run in the woods, and they were very much sort of self-employed entrepreneurs. They would take it upon themselves to take trade goods and then go out and meet the aboriginals and do the trade directly themselves. It did get more sophisticated as time moved on and much more organized. In the mid-17th century, a couple of French entrepreneurs, themselves explorers, de Grosseyre and Radisson, struck upon a wonderful idea. They had learned from the Cree aboriginals further inland that the best fur was to be found north and west of Lake Superior. De Grosseyre et Radisson worked out that this meant the Hudson Bay area. So they decided, well, why not come in through the Hudson Bay and deal directly with the Cree right in the north, where the fur is more demanded and of a better quality? They approached the French Secretary of State, who, in as many words, said, "Nino, Nino, Nino," and sent them packing. The French government had no interest in expanding their fur trade and trying this untested route of the Hudson Bay. So, the two gentlemen went to a group of Boston businessmen, made a few connections in England, and eventually convinced King Charles II to send two ships through the Hudson Bay on an expedition. They arrived in the bay, they traded quite well with the local Cree, and came back to London with one ship laden with beautiful furs. It was settled. The king signed a charter in 1670, granting a monopoly in fur trade for the entire Hudson Bay region. Of course, the king had absolutely no idea how vast a territory he was signing away. He actually did not give this charter to de Grosseyre and Radisson, but to his cousin, Prince Rupert, and that is why the territory is called Rupert's Land. When you put two companies in a small space, there is bound to be competition. So the French eventually marched their way up the Hudson Bay, as that is where the English resided. They saw no need to come into the English compound itself, and the French simply arrived with 10 more men than the English. The English said to themselves, "Oh heavens, this isn't good." So they simply packed up and left, and let the French take the fort. The English came back a couple of years later with 10 men more than the French had, and the French said to themselves, "Ah, sacré bleu!" They left and gave the fort to the English again, and so the forts along the bay passed between the English and French hands for a great deal of time. That is, of course, until that infamous year 1759, when the area controlled by the French fell to Britain and was incorporated into its colonies here. This meant that the company had a monopoly over all fur trade throughout the region. The company could remain in the forts along the bay, letting the aboriginals come to the company, and it could do the trading. Well, things are very short-lived, as you can imagine. It didn't take long for some entrepreneuring Englishmen who had settled in Montreal to hit upon an idea. They looked about them and said, "Oh, look, there are all these old coureurs de bois without jobs. There's this wonderful network of forts. Let's put together some capital and start a little fur trading, shall we? Good way to make some good money and have a little fun along the way." And that is exactly what they did. There were a number of businesses running against each other, and they eventually decided to merge together and form the Northwest Company. That was around the year 1779, if my memory serves correctly. So this put an end to the company's monopoly yet again.